Blog Talk Radio.
This is Lori Smith. This is One Child to Be a Survivor to Another Restoration. Glad to be here. And it's Monday morning, August the 14th, 2017, 7 o'clock in the morning. Just having coffee, waking up. Glad to be here. Hopefully you had a good weekend. My weekend was good. Not bad at all. And this is just a morning reflection, really looking at, you know, what I need to work on for my healing journey, you know, and just doing some positive reinforcement, positive reflection, self-care, coping mechanisms, things like that. So hopefully this show is helping somebody else out there. I know it's helpful for me. It keeps me on my healing journey. That's why I do this. And so I'm happy to do it. And I'm thankful for all the people that have been tuning in. And hopefully, like I said, you're getting something out of it. You know, if you're a survivor and you're just starting out on your healing journey, you want to make sure you're safe enough before you listen to the show. If you don't know if you're safe enough and you just don't really know about that information, you need to find that information and read it and get it and learn it and know how to keep yourself safe and how to know whether or not you're safe enough to be listening, that something like this wouldn't, you know, won't trigger you and cause you to have a miserable day, right, or go backward in your healing journey, which you really don't want. And you can get that information from many different places, but I know of two. One's HAVOCA, H-A-V-O-C-A, HAVOCA, Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse.org, H-A-V-O-C-A, or there's the ASCA, Adult Survivors of Child Abuse and Morris Center Program, and they have the Survivor to Thriver workbook that you can read online there. It's free. Both of this information is free, and you can read that in Safety First chapter at ASCA, Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, and their Survivor to Thriver manual. You can read that info and learn whether or not you're safe enough. You can tell. There's ways to tell if you're safe enough to be listening to something like this. So make sure you get that info before you listen to something like this, anything like this, and keep yourself safe, right? Otherwise, just turn the show off. You won't be hurting my feelings. And if you're just anybody else listening, listen at your own discretion. I'm talking about abuse, very sensitive subject. Something that I believe needs to be talked about, but it's very sensitive material, so you have to make that ultimate decision. You know, it's your choice to listen, so make sure that this, you know, if the topics of abuse or any type of abuse or, you know, violence, trauma, this kind of stuff might bother you, then don't listen to the show. Turn it off, or you won't be hurting my feelings, right? Because ultimately it's your choice, right? So you have to make the right decision for yourself, right? So we'll get right into this, and this is just a morning reflection I can ask myself, and which I do. Check in to see how I'm doing, you know. Morning reflection, how am I doing on my healing journey? Any particular things I need to work on? How am I feeling? This is stuff that we can ask ourselves. I'm feeling actually really pretty good today. It's Monday. I don't like Mondays. I don't do well for Monday. I don't really handle, certain things very well. Sunday is very triggering for me anyway. And then Monday just reminds me of things that I need to get done, so that I'm automatically stressed out. So I don't like Mondays, but you know, we'll get through. I don't know, very many people actually like Mondays, but by Tuesday I'm sort of easing into the week, so I always feel a little bit better on Tuesday. But you know, it's Monday, and here we go. So how am I feeling? I didn't have any real, you know, flashbacks or anything over the weekend. Didn't have anything really trigger me. Actually had a pretty decent weekend. I have a lot of I have trouble sleeping, like I was talking about on Friday there, so sleeping is an issue, but I did try to get some rest this weekend, just exhausted, and took a little bit of a break, and didn't get any of my work done in my workbook, unfortunately. My workbook that's been put out by Allender, Dr. Danby Allender, Wounded Heart, I'm still working on getting back to that. I was going to do some of that yesterday, but I was actually had some pain dealing with some pain, dealing with some facial pain, facial nerve pain, and jaw pain and teeth problems. So I didn't do any studying. I just sort of took it easy and rested and relaxed and tried to get my face pain, I call it my face pain because it really hurts my whole face, to calm down. So it was kind of more that situation yesterday, so I didn't get any real work done. But I'll get back to it at some point. But these are the things that I can sort of keep track of, you know, how am I feeling, how am I doing, and then I can work on what I need to work on. So I think it's important to do that morning reflection. That's why I like to do that. Because otherwise, you know, 6 months will roll by and I haven't done anything. So that's why I like to do this sort of check in and make sure everything's, you know, where I should be and, you know, get help if I need it, right? We're going to pick up this morning with the Havoka anger section. And I did pop the link into the chat room there if you want to check that out. And it's Havoka, H-A-V-O-C-A, Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse, Information for Survivors. And if you go click on their Information for Survivors tab, there's a whole bunch of tabs that will come up on the left side, and anger is one of them. So that's where we're at, looking at anger from Havoka.org. And we left off Friday. I'm not going to reread that. You can just check that out. But we'll pick up where it starts here this morning. It says, so how can anger be used as a tool? Anger is something like a barometer. It measures the need to protect ourselves. When we feel angry or behave angrily, we need to look at what is happening in our lives and determine what it is we are needing to protect. For example, when asked to do something for someone else, an adult survivor may feel anger when she gives an automatic yes response, and then at some level realizes, I guess he or she, right, did not want to do what they agreed to do. When an adult survivor pays attention to this feeling and respects its message, he or she can take steps to change their response to a no, or at least work at becoming more assertive so they can say no on future occasions. Anger is also something like a battery. It provides energy that allows us to take action. They said the daughter mentioned in our scenario, that was from Friday, you can go back and listen to that, might also use her anger to provide energy for her involvement in a career or volunteer position doing child protection work. So that's kind of interesting. That's a huge problem for, especially for women. I don't know about men so much, but I know I've talked to lots and lots of women survivors who have had that issue where, you know, they feel like they have to say yes. It's an automatic thing. It's almost not even like a feeling that they have to. They just automatically say yes when somebody asks them to do something. It's very true. That's that submissive role, right? And they also, not only that, there's many reasons for it. They also want people to like them. They want to be accepted. They want to, you know, as an adult, you know, survivor who was a victim of child abuse, you know, there's many times a person just really wants people to accept them and wants to be included, wants to be cared about, wants to be thought of as a good person, wants to be counted on, right, to show that they're responsible for whatever reason. Could be any number of things, right? So they'll quite often just say yes without even thinking about it, and then later get mad and think, you know, why did I agree to do that, right? So I totally agree with what they're saying there. I know that I've never been really a doormat. I guess when I call a person, sometimes people call them doormats, which is not very nice, but it's kind of one way of looking at it. You know, people just take advantage because when a survivor of abuse, you know, wants these things so badly, they'll basically say yes to anything. And then do it, but in their heart and in their mind, they know that they don't really want to be doing that, but they do it anyway. And then people feel that they can just kind of walk on them, right? Take advantage, right? And it was really important to learn how to say no. And I know for myself, like, but how to say no without hurting people? We don't have to say no and hurt people. I actually learned how to say no, but I became a bit of a sort of a harsh, abusive person because I was like, my no was kind of like a harsh no. It wasn't like a nice no. It was kind of like, it was kind of my protecting myself, my way of protecting myself as a young adult, not really knowing how to deal with things. And I would come across crass and, you know, people would stay away from me because they were like, man, I don't want to be hanging around with somebody like that. You know, she's rude. And so I had to learn how to say no without being, you know, so harsh in my assertiveness, right? And so I've actually learned how to do that. Say no with a smile on my face and then, you know, maybe even give a reason why. And don't feel that I have to do something just because somebody asked me to do it. And it's I have gotten control of that, but I'm also much older now. But I know when I was younger, I had a problem with that. But just saying no, that's a huge issue for survivors of abuse. I mean, especially, you know, I don't. This show is not just geared to CSA child sexual abuse. You know, I am a survivor of CSA child sexual abuse, but I'd really don't like to just focus on just only those issues, right? Because there's so many other survivors who've survived other types of abuse, not just CSA, right? But that is a huge issue for CSA survivors. And I think that because, you know, CSA child sexual abuse survivors, we may have said no and the abuse just continued on. I know that I actually said no to all the abuse. And the issue is even with my parents, you know, I mean, you know, being beaten and tortured, right? I was like begging, you know, please, no, you know. And I'm not going to go into more details. They're too graphic. But the issue is, you know, because it didn't, my no was not accepted and not validated, and I didn't have a voice growing up abused. No abused children don't have voices within their abusive environments, wherever they are. It's harder later on as an adult to say no, to think that we can actually say no, that we're allowed to say no. I know as a young teen, you know, I had a lot of unwanted sexual touching. It's hard to say no. Because CSA child sexual abuse was allowed to continue on. My mother knew about it and just allowed it to continue on, didn't do anything to get me any help. And so then later on I had some unwanted sexual touching by a couple of different people that, you know, I didn't know that I could say no. Basically, I thought that I had to do whatever anybody told me I had to do, which is pretty horrific. But this is the way it goes for so many survivors of abuse, right? And then as I got older, I started to realize that this was wrong, and I knew it was wrong in the first place, but that I did have a way to, like, I could say no, but my then became anger really, really bad because of the abuse that I suffered. And then I, you know, if somebody did something to me that, you know, was asking me to do something, I would basically become abusive toward them because I was like, don't ask me to do that. Or, you know, if I had a little bit of somebody was trying to advance on me, maybe like a guy, you know, I would take that as abuse, and I would just, you know, either beat him up or tell him off or scream or whatever, scream at him. Had all kinds of weird situations, you know, and I think most, you know, most people can, if you go back and you look through the annals of your history, which is a lot, you know, to try to write a book of every single detail is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, but in my mind's eye, I mean, I can remember these certain scenarios where I was so angry with myself later that I didn't say no, and I just allowed somebody to do whatever they were going to do, which is molestation, fondling, this kind of stuff, because I was abused as a child by every authoritarian figure in my life, which was my mom and my dad and my older siblings. So then I didn't know that I could really say no, and then I got mad because I didn't say no. And I didn't, you know, react in that way. So then I became abusive in saying no. So anger is quite, you know, it's interesting. It's very necessary. Like they said, it provides energy that allows us to take action, right? So, you know, it doesn't mean that we have to become abusers, right? Or that we should become abusive when we say no. We need to learn how to manage it. And that's why anger management, right? Very, very important. I did lots and lots of shows on this, looking at Dave Decker's work and Mike Obsatz from angerresources.com. And that was very, very helpful for me as a survivor to go through that information. So you can find those shows here on Blog Talk Radio, but man, you'd have to go back like 30, 40 pages or something. I really don't know. It's way back there. Probably halfway through my shows at like show 500 or something like that. You know, I've done like 1,170 shows here. Like, it's probably somewhere way back there, like 500, 600, you know, somewhere around there. So it'd be hard to find. But, and I didn't label my shows, unfortunately. I'm doing that on my website if you want to check my Born in Hell website out. All of my shows are categorized there. And they're all not categorized by anger, by topic, but they're listed and the show topics are listed. So you can actually go through them and pick out where I was actually talking about that. I guess I could go find that information for you. But probably somewhere around 2011, somewhere in there. Maybe 2010. So it's way back there. So we'll pick up the rest of this article on Friday. There's a little more piece, a bit of more of that. There's quite a lot. This is lengthy, this anger section. I hope you'll check it out. www.havoka.org, survivors/anger. And you can read the whole thing there. It's really interesting. And go to that anger resources. That's a really good website. Positive reinforcement. What are we doing right in our daily walk? Looking at positives and progress instead of negatives. That's very important to do because it's so easy to get down on ourselves, you know, to feel like, you know, just play that old role of, you know, I'll just, you know, I'm this and I'm that and I can't get anything done and I'm just useless or whatever is going through our minds, these old roles that we used to play from being abused that we take on as, you know, and keep as an adult and don't get rid of it. It's just way too easy to do, you know. I'm perfectly capable of getting things done and, you know, I can look at the positives instead of just looking at the negatives all the time. And I don't have to continue on in that role playing that I was forced to play as a child being abused, right? So I like what they had to say on this positive self-talk. This is from Havoka, Affirmations, Positive Self-Talk. And we're at the very last part of this article, and then we'll look at some affirmations. They said, this technique will eventually require some level of consciousness. You can go back and pick this up. They were talking about positive self-talk. Like, it's an extended affirmation, right? Longer than a sentence, they said, perhaps a paragraph. This could be a page long, they said, really. And it should be coming from our mind, like our mind talk. So it's something that we could sit and have like a whole lengthy discourse of positive self-talk. And it has to be very powerful. So they said, work on it, you know, while you're waiting for a bus, while we're waiting for an appointment, do it for half an hour, right after morning prayer, meditation, whatever. Instead of reading something written, try calling on your own inner source and for positive thinking and just start producing positive words, phrases, sentences in your mind. It has to be stuff that we believe and actually know about ourselves, which is true. Just to say a bunch of stuff that isn't true doesn't necessarily work, I don't think, because people don't believe those lies. I mean, I can't sit there and say, I'm the most successful person in the whole planet. It's like, and every single person I've ever met loves me. That's just not true. You know, I'm not very successful according to the world. I'm very successful in my own eyes just because I managed to survive and not kill myself. I think that's great. That's the height of success as far as I'm concerned. And also, you know, as far as everybody liking me, everybody that I've ever met likes me. That's just not true. You know, we're never going to have that situation because there will always be somebody that doesn't like us. You know, that's why I don't try to win people's approval. I really don't. And it's like I used to when I was younger because I never got my mom's approval. You know, so I used to kind of, I don't know, I'd behave in ways that I thought would get certain people's peers approval just so that, you know, I could gain some sort of approval from somebody. But now I don't live my life like that because I'm much older. I don't care anymore. I'm like, whatever. If they either like me or they don't. And that's the truth because people just don't personally like every single person they run across. You know, it's just the way it is. It's not an insult. We don't have to get along with every single person we don't have to be best buddies with every single person we meet. You know, some people's personalities just clash and that's all there is to it. That doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with them. It also doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. And that's right. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me. And you know, I thought about that, actually. Just now that we're talking about that, this sort of brings up something I was thinking about yesterday that came to my mind that it was actually kind of brought me some peace, you know, from all this abuse, horror, trauma that's left over that I deal with, you know, daily, moment by moment as I live and walk this earth, right? Which is just the knowledge of the abuse that I suffered because I don't deny any of it, right? Well, I was just yesterday just sort of drifting off, you know, before I went to sleep last night. And it just came to me, and I thought, you know, I pictured, because I was kind of going in and doing some inner child work, and I sort of pictured myself and got a hold of some feelings that I thought, you know, really I knew were there, but I didn't ever really kind of sort of worked on getting a hold of. And that was the feelings of just that there was something wrong with me, and that's why my parents abused me. I guess as a little child, I mean, growing up, you know, abused, I just pictured myself because I can remember how I felt that there was something wrong with me. That's why my mom abused me. That's why she didn't love me, because this is what she told me. You know, that was this rape child that I deserved to be beaten on because my behavior was so bad and I was just such a bad kid that she had to beat me all the time just because I was so bad. So kind of, she wouldn't call me evil. She would just call me horrible names. And you know, just being rejected, you know, that whole rejection thing, I think as a child is very difficult. And I used to think, well, what's wrong with me? You know, something wrong with me. And I felt very much that there was something wrong with me, That's why my parents abused me. I didn't take on the guilt from the abuse. I knew that that I wasn't doing anything wrong, and that abuse wasn't because I was a bad kid. So I didn't take that on. But I did take on the situation where looking at myself and trying to see myself as others saw me, and I definitely saw that in my mind's eye that there was something wrong with me. And that's why my parents abused me. My siblings made fun of me, got me into trouble with my parents. A couple of my siblings used to sort of punch me out and beat on me a little bit. My sister was next in age to me, and my brother next age in her. And then my other brother sexually abusing me, raping me for a year, sexually abusing me. I just thought there was just something wrong with me. I was like, there's definitely something wrong with me. That's just how, and then that becomes then depression, sadness, you know, anger, frustration, self-hatred, because I'm no good, you know. And just like my mom said, I don't deserve to be here sort of thing, this sort of stuff. This is why this all came about and really culminated in a lot of self-injury and self-suicidal ideation. Really horrific, you know. And I thought about it last night as I was going through and catching a hold of these feelings, right, doing this inner child work and allowing my inner children to speak a little bit. As much as they wanted to, really. They didn't have much to say. But just the feelings, I could feel it. And I was like, yeah, there wasn't anything wrong with me. So then, you know, as a teen growing up, feeling so self-conscious, you know, because there's something wrong with me. I'm a girl. I'm a woman. I've got breasts. That was a real problem because I was sexually abused at eight years old, you know, and then fondled and had some unwanted sexual touching from other people. But the, you know, the huge, you know, just the horror of being sexually assaulted at 8 years old for a year, just damaging my body. I didn't want to be a woman. My dad raped my mother in front of me, which really caused me a lot of problems with my body. I didn't want to be a woman. You know, I was raped. My dad raped my mom in front of me when I was six. And then my brother sexually abused me for a year when I was 8 to 9. So I just didn't want to be a woman. And then I was, of course, you know, as I started growing and developing, you know, into my prepubescent teen years, you know, I started to become a tomboy because I didn't want to associate with being a woman, you know. There wasn't anything wrong with me. There was nothing wrong with my body. There was nothing wrong with me. I mean, they damaged it. They trashed it, you know. And then later on, I did a lot of drugs and stuff, and then I trashed it, right? And just a lot of dangerous behaviors. But originally, when I first started out as that little girl, that little baby and that little girl, there was nothing wrong with me. There was no reason that any of that should have happened. It wasn't something I did, or it wasn't because I was this or I was that. Or see, that's why we have to get a hold of that stuff, because it's very important to realize that abuse is not the abuse we suffered is not our fault. We really can't take responsibility on for that, you know. But then on the other hand, even though we might say, okay, I know it wasn't my fault, that's fine, it wasn't my fault, none of it, then what do I do with the whole residual leftovers of feeling like there's something wrong with me, that I don't fit in, that I don't belong, that there is still something wrong with me? And I think what it is we have to realize and acknowledge that we're never going to be able to get that back from our childhoods, what we really needed, because it's gone. So we have to start today by really learning how to love ourselves and accept ourselves for who we are. You know, it has to start today. I have to love myself for me as I am today. You know, a survivor who's never, you know, going to get that back, what I should have had as a child, but that I can accept myself for who I am today because of the abuse that I suffered, and learn, you know, to get through this life and learn to be okay with myself as who I am today, with the scars, with the trauma, with the flashbacks, with all of that. You know, because I'm never going to be okay with the abuse. Like I said on Friday's show, I mean, it's never going to be okay what they did. But I can be okay with myself. And I think that's where that whole thing of just, I got a hold of that feeling for the first, really recognized it last night before I was going to bed. That's how I felt, that there was something wrong with me, which caused me a lot of problems growing up. You know, a lot of self-worth, acknowledgement that I actually did deserve to be here and didn't deserve to be killed or be dead with the other stillborn babies like my mother used to tell me, and that I deserved to be treated so horribly, right? So very important that we get a hold of this stuff. And this kind of positive self-talk is very important. We can do this stuff. We don't have to sit there and come up with stuff that doesn't really matter to us, like that doesn't really ring true in our lives. You know, this is, I can do powerful self-talk as far as saying, you know, I could do a 15, 20-minute spiel to myself. It doesn't have to be anybody else around. I could write it down or I could just say it, you know, that, no, I didn't deserve to be treated like that. I was a precious, cute little girl who just wanted love from her mom and dad. Didn't want abuse, didn't want to be treated like that, didn't want to see her dad hurting her mom or her mom hurting the kids or her dad hurting the kids. You know, I just wanted love, right? And I deserved it. I didn't do anything wrong, you know. And the same with the CSA child sexual abuse. I did nothing wrong. I didn't want to be raped and assaulted by my brother. I loved my brother, right? But I didn't ask for that, right? And no, you know, how he thought I deserved that, I don't know. I don't think he cared. He just wanted to hurt me. He just wanted to use me, basically. This was convenience, really, more than likely. And that's horrific, right? I didn't deserve that, you know. So we, you know, I deserve to be loved and cared for as an adult survivor of child abuse and CSA child sexual abuse. I deserve to have my needs met. I deserve love. I deserve to be in loving friendships, loving relationships. I don't deserve to be abused anymore, any further re-victimization. I deserve to be able to have clear boundaries and clear relationships with people where, you know, we're on the same level and boundaries are set, you know, and that I'm going to take care of myself, I'm going to do the right things for myself, help other people around me if I can. Very important, right? We can make these positive self-talk things and affirmations work for us as long as we keep true to what we know is true. So I think that's very important. And for me to sit there and try to say I'm the best worker there's ever been in the world, I mean, that's just stupid, you know, or something that I know has nothing to do with me. As far as, you know, certain affirmations will say stuff that just doesn't quite make sense. But we have to find the ones that actually do and then stick with them and go with them and turn it into positive self-talk, you know, instead of being so hard and down on ourselves, right? Instead of allowing that old way of thinking of that manifestation of, you know, oh, I'm just this or I'm that, because that's what the abuser voice always said, tells me in my head, you know, from the past, right? Or that, you know, even if it's just an inner critic, it's not somebody else's voice, you know, it could be my own inner critic, my own abuser voice telling me, you know, these horrible things, right? And I can shut them down with positive talk. And it's very important to learn how to do that. So this self-esteem stuff isn't as stupid as people think. A lot of people like to make fun of it. But until you've been a survivor of horrific abuse, and then, you know, the culmination of the torture and the trauma and the torment, you know, the psychological damage and emotional trauma and emotional damage, you know, that would just kill a person, right? Kill a child, which does. This stuff's horrific. These affirmations are very important. They're not stupid. So I think they're very good. And we'll work on some of those Monday. We'll actually pick a couple out for Monday. You can go there to Havoka and look at their affirmations tab. That's where I got this information. And how about let's do meditation square, meditation on healing anger. This is kind of like self-care. What can I do for myself, you know, as far as coping skills, coping mechanisms? First of all, you have a right to be angry, they said. You have a right to let go of the anger. Breathe in empowering energy. Breathe out the anger. Breathe in new freedom. Breathe out the anger. Breathe in cleansing energy. Allow the anger to be replaced by calm. See your anger dissolve into a hot color. Let the color flow out the ends of your hands. Allow a soothing color to fill the space the anger has left. You have paid enough for the abuse. You deserve to be free of the anger, fear, and hurt. I love that. That's awesome. That's Quilt Square Meditation on Healing Anger from irvingstudios.com/child_abuse_survivor_monument. If you just type into your browser Child Abuse Survivor Monument and look under their Survivor tab, you can find this Quilt Square Meditation on Healing. Really, really great stuff. So that's about all we have time for today. If you're struggling and having a hard time, you know, you reach out and get some help. Do struggle on your own. Even if, like I said, I always say, even if it means calling a crisis line, you do whatever you have to do. But you hang in there and get some help. You so deserve it. So do I. We all do. So you have, I wish you a really good week. I hope that you don't struggle too much. And, you know, you take care of yourself because you so deserve so much better. So do I. We're going to take care of ourselves. Absolutely. And I'll see you back here Friday. Have a good week, everybody.